The unfolding humanitarian catastrophe in Iraq is undoubtedly a terrible tragedy for the country's Christian and Yazidi minorities who have been targeted by the Islamist terror group Islamic State, formerly known as ISIS. There have been reports of mass murder and other atrocities carried out, which, to some commentators, bear all the hallmarks of an attempted genocide. In a moment, we'll talk about what the West can and should be doing to intervene. But first, for a sense of what's happening in northern Iraq, I've been speaking to Donatella Rovera, a senior crisis reporter with Amnesty International in the region. I began by asking her what was the motivation for this brutality by ISIS. And I warn you, this interview includes some quite graphic descriptions of that brutality, so it's not suitable for any young children who may be listening to the radio this morning.
Well, ISIS has a long-proven track record of brutality, and they really don't spare anybody. Earlier on, a few weeks ago, it was Shia Turkmen and Shia Shabak who were the primary targets of their attacks. They were driven from their homes. They had their religious shrines and places of worship demolished. And then it's been the turn of the Christians and the Yazidis. And all along, it's also been against Sunni Muslims who do not agree with them.
I'm just looking at a Facebook page from Canon Andrew White, the vicar of Baghdad, and he tells me that one of the most appalling images he's seen so far is a family of eight, all the members of that family shot through the face, lying in a pool of blood in their living room with their Bible, their family Bible, open on a couch beside them. This is the kind of almost symbolic killing.
Does he give any indication of where that happened?
He hasn't given the details of the actual location of it. He says that he's not prepared to post the image because it's just simply too graphic.
Well, I mean, the displaced people that I've been speaking to in the last few days, some of them have lost family members, had family members who were abducted and killed in front of them. Others have their family members who were abducted, and they have absolutely no way of knowing whether they are alive or dead or what has happened to them. This is both men and women. Yesterday I was speaking to a man whose two little girls were killed, his daughters, as they were fleeing Sinjar. One of them was killed on the spot, and the other was injured and died up in the mountain. His little boy was also injured, but luckily, lightly. These were just a family who was fleeing, and they were fired on from a distance as they were fleeing their home. The vast majority of the hundreds of thousands of displaced have luckily not experienced such brutality. They have managed to get out before ISIS arrived, but many of them have.
What do you believe the international community needs to do? The United States has talked in the last day or so about the possibility of airstrikes. Is that necessary at this point?
Well, there have been, from what I understand, a couple of airstrikes near ISIS position, just on the eastern outskirts of Mosul. What the impact of that will be, I don't know. Looking at them, they look more like symbolic airstrikes than anything that can be a game changer. With regard to the airstrikes, what we've seen is airstrikes by Iraqi government forces, which have been going on for the past 2 months against ISIS targets, supposedly, in Mosul and in Tal Afar. In reality, hardly any ISIS targets have been hit, but civilians have been killed. The last such case was only last weekend when a university professor from Mosul University, his wife and their four young children, two boys and two girls, were killed by an Iraqi airstrike as they were sleeping in their homes. So far, the airstrikes that have been carried out by Iraqi Air Force been ineffective. They have not targeted ISIS position, but in several incidents, civilians were hurt. So it is extremely important that whoever is engaged in any type of military action, that these are not in any way going to endanger the civilian population that is already terrified both by ISIS and by the airstrike.
These attacks by ISIS are absolutely ruthless. Do you believe that they are much more serious than simply random, ruthless, brutal attacks? This is part of a systematic genocide.
It's really difficult to know what their motivations are. They seem to, you know, quite clearly have specific geographic areas in mind. But as I said, they have really not spared anybody. There are many, many Muslims, Sunni Muslims, who have fled the areas under ISIS control because they do not agree with ISIS, because they used to work with the Iraqi army, the US army, and that's reason enough for them to be fearful for their safety, and rightly so, because many of those have been killed. We've seen what ISIS has done when they have captured soldiers. And they executed them. They were not necessarily from other faiths. So it's a very brutal group that seems to really spare no one.
From the vantage point of this part of the world, we're seeing these images, and we're pained by the images we're seeing. But we also feel quite powerless to do anything about it. What do you think can be done to bring an end to all of this killing?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, it's important that the concerned parties, the Iraqi central government, the Kurdish regional government, and the international community, both donor countries and humanitarian agencies, make a collective effort to step up humanitarian aid, because people are being displaced. These people leave their homes with nothing but the clothes on their back. They leave their life and possessions behind. They need everything, and they are not getting the humanitarian assistance that they need so far. And then it's important that more is done to ensure the protection of the civilian population, especially those who are in areas that may be at risk of ISIS attacks. And in so doing, for any of the parties who are involved or may be involved in military operation, the protection of the civilians should be at the top of the agenda, because, as I said, we have seen in recent weeks and days strikes which were supposed to be against ISIS militants and who instead killed civilians. I can tell you that I've been speaking to people in Mosul. The people who live in Mosul, there is more than a million people. They are absolutely terrified. They cannot leave because now they can no longer leave the borders of Mosul. There are clashes. And they are absolutely, absolutely terrified that their homes will be hit by mistakes, perhaps. But that what happened to other families will happen to them.
Donatella Rovera, a senior crisis reporter with Amnesty International in Iraq, speaking to me this weekend. And since we recorded that interview with Donatella, the United States, of course, began in earnest airstrikes in the region. Those airstrikes are continuing, aimed at halting this terror group's advance. The RAF have also begun dropping humanitarian aid supplies to fleeing refugees. But there are, of course, renewed calls for the UK government to do more, to offer asylum, for example, to the refugees who are fleeing for their lives. Let's explore some of that with the Irish Catholic columnist David Quinn, the Reverend Nadeem Nassar, who's from Syria and is currently director of the Awareness Foundation in London, and Geoffrey Donaldson, MP, who's a member of the House of Commons Defence Select Committee. Good morning to you all. Welcome to Sunday Sequence. Geoffrey, let me begin with you. This is absolutely appalling when you hear these descriptions coming through day by day of what seems like a psychopathic organization on a rampage through this region. What should the United Kingdom specifically be doing in addition to simply dropping humanitarian aid supplies?
Well, good morning, William, and you're absolutely right. When you look at the scenes that we are now subjected to on a daily basis coming from northern Iraq. It just it defies imagination what people are being put through, the suffering, the tactics of IS, beheading children, burying people alive, summary execution of opponents, and of course forcing people either to convert to Islam or to flee. And there is a building, a growing humanitarian crisis here. So I think that the UK has to respond at two levels. I've become very reluctant, I have to say, as a Member of Parliament and a Member of the Defence Committee, to contemplate the UK becoming involved in military action in some of these countries. I think we've had our fingers burnt so many times, but I do think we do now seriously need to look at joining the United States in these airstrikes against IS. I think the UK has to consider whether it is in the best interest, not just of the people who are now suffering, but of some degree of stability, restoring some degree of stability in this region, that we become involved at that level. I think we need to give consideration to that. And I voted against the UK intervening in Syria. And I'm glad that I did. If we had intervened, ironically, we would have been intervening. Yes, it would have been in response to the use of chemical weapons by Assad. But I think if we'd intervened, we would have been intervening on the side of the very people who are now committing these atrocities. And I and others warned in Parliament at the time that they were gathering strength, that they were ruthless, that they were extremists who had an agenda that was most certainly not about establishing democracy in Syria. And now we see it spreading into northern Iraq, and I think it won't stop here. And unless we do something to bring a halt to this, it will spread. Already we're seeing this extremism operating in Libya, and we're pulling our diplomatic representation out of Libya. The embassy is closing. What's happening in Libya is spreading to the edge of Egypt, the border with Egypt, and there is the possibility it'll spill over into Egypt. There have been incidents recently in Lebanon. So you have this entire region, William, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, Iraq, Libya, and
and they're on fire. It's a region on fire.
Yeah. And this is a serious situation. And yes, we need to send humanitarian aid, but frankly, I don't think that's good enough. I think that we have something here that could make what happened in the Balkans look very minimal. The potential of this is enormous.
Well, that's very interesting. A very strong comment from Geoffrey Donaldson, who, as I say, is on the House of Commons Defence Select Committee, asking the government to consider doing more than simply offering humanitarian aid, but to consider military intervention, not just technical aid for the United States, but military intervention. David Quinn's been listening to this. David, this is a real test for anyone who believes in the importance of peacemaking through negotiation, isn't it? Because when you're dealing with an organisation like Islamic State or ISIS, you're not dealing with people who are easy to talk to.
Well, I mean, I presume that they would be impossible to talk to at this stage. I mean, as impossible as we say Boko Haram in Nigeria. And so it's very hard to avoid a conclusion that only a military a response is suitable here. I mean, I was listening to what Geoffrey was saying, and I agree with him, actually, that airstrikes in Syria would have been a mistake, because what the Western powers have learned is that almost every intervention in the Middle East to date has actually made a bad situation worse. But here the situation couldn't be worse. I mean, ISIS is about the worst form of jihadism yet to appear. It's been extraordinarily successful. It's moved at breathtaking speed. I mean, we saw that even the Kurdish militia weren't able to stand up to it. The assumption was that they would be, and they weren't. I mean, as a result of that, the biggest Christian town, which is south of Mosul, has had to be evacuated. We've seen what's happened to the Yazidis, who are now taking refuge on a mountain.
And by some reports, up to 70% of them dead already on that mountain.
Well, I mean, that would just be such a disaster if that was true. I mean, it just goes to show you that actually this should have begun some weeks ago. I mean, the reason the Americans didn't intervene at the start with this is because they wanted a unity government to be formed in the country. But actually, that delay has simply allowed ISIS to gain strength and the humanitarian disaster to get worse and worse. And then you see a situation where, you know, the Western media were understandably to some extent distracted by Gaza, but overly distracted really, because, I mean, this thing which is happening in northern Iraq and Syria is just on a scale that's just breathtaking in its awfulness and its magnitude. And it took, you know, until American airstrikes began for this to move to anywhere close to the top of the news agenda.
Why do you think that was, David? I was conscious of that too.
And yes, and even now, I mean, I don't think it's getting, you know, sufficient coverage. I mean, it's not the kind of blanket coverage that the situation in Gaza has been getting today. And like, even the churches, and I'm writing about this in the Irish Catholic this week, like, even that, I mean, like, you go into masses and it's hardly mentioned. Now, today, apparently, it's got to be mentioned in prayers of the faithful. But even that's not enough. Because, the amount of solidarity that Christians in the West are showing towards Christians in Iraq and other countries where they've been persecuted, and to minorities like the Yazidis, simply is insufficient. We've got to show much more solidarity in terms of material aid, prayer, etc., than we've been showing to date. I mean, I just can't quite get my head around the lack of solidarity that even Christians, let alone non-Christians, are showing to the now extremely persecuted minorities that are in countries like Iraq, where Christianity has existed for longer than it's existed in places like Ireland.
Yeah. Nadeem Nasser, do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. Good morning.
Good morning.
William. I think, first of all, nobody is talking about the question, who is supporting these people? Who are behind them?
And who created them?
Who created them? And how come that suddenly, in less than a year and a half, or maximum two, such one of the most powerful and the mightiest terrorist organization appears out of nowhere, like ISIS, and takes the second largest city in Iraq under the noses of the Americans and the British and the whole world? I think, first of all, nobody wants to face this question, because this question means scandals from the British government to the American government to the whole Western world. Second, we have to face a bigger question. How come that nobody is talking about some of the Arab states involved in this?
And we're talking about Saudi Arabia specifically now, aren't we?
Exactly. And those Arab states are the friends of the NATO and the America and the UK. Another issue we have is I don't agree with your Amnesty correspondent that we do not know. Of course we know. There is a systematic cleansing for the minorities in Iraq, preparing Iraq to be divided.
I entirely agree with you in terms of the definition of genocide, because if you define genocide in terms of an ethnic cleansing based on someone's religious or ethnic identity, that is precisely what we are seeing here.
Exactly. Why shall we go around the bush and say, well, we don't know the motive? Of course we know the motive. The motive is this dividing Iraq. Iraq, the central government, has been totally a big failure to talk to the Sunni and talk to the Christians. Al-Maliki failed dismally, supported by the West, supported by America and the UK. He thought he would be Nelson Mandela of Iraq, and he was absolute failure and an idiot. And the central government failed. The Western countries, especially America and the UK, failed to bring Iraq from one bank of the river to the other, and they left Iraq in the middle to sink. And we see in Syria the Christians are being slaughtered right and left and center, and nobody cares, let alone I do agree with your guest that the church, the silence of the church is deafening. Absolutely deafening, William. Go to the Church of England website and the Church, the Archbishop of Canterbury's website. One of the senior officials in the church told me, "No, Father Nadeem, we're doing a lot. We're lobbying. We're doing this and that." And go to the website. So I went to the website and I was digging all morning in the two websites to see what we can see about Syria, Iraq. I went to Views, the Church of England Views, and I looked under the letter S for Syria. 8 out of 10 items there were talking about sex. And I went to the Archbishop of Canterbury's website, nothing except a recent statement about Gaza, nothing about Iraq, nothing about Syria.
Well, to be fair to them, I did do an interview this morning with the Archbishop of Canterbury and also with Cardinal Vincent Nichols, and they have spoken out today.
Finally, after two years, well done, Archbishop.
Let me pick up one of those points you made about Western intervention being part of what created this appalling situation. Geoffrey Donaldson, is that a fair analysis?
I think Western policy has failed in this region. There's no doubt about that, William. When you look at what we've sought to do in places like Libya, just lamentably failed. And I agree. I mean, I think you will find your three contributors here in complete agreement. As a member of the all-party group on religious persecution in Parliament, a number of us now, particularly from Northern Ireland, have been pressing the UK government on the persecution of Christians, the widespread persecution of Christians.
And it's underreported in the media.
It is underreported, William, but it frankly, in terms of our own UK Foreign Office, it hasn't been a priority. I've been appalled when you look at what's happening in Nigeria, when you look at what has been happening across Iraq, not just now. I mean, the persecution of Christians in northern Iraq has been going on now for some time.
Well, what about Saudi Arabia, Geoffrey? I mean, these are the allies of Britain and America in the region.
Indeed. And
where's all the money from ISIS coming from?
In some of the countries that are our allies, unfortunately, a lot of the funding for these activities are coming from those countries. And I think that we have to be challenging them about their record on religious persecution.
And is that that's a consequence of oil dependency?
It's partly that, William. And I think it's also partly the consequence of a very mixed up foreign policy, which on the one hand appears to criticise some countries where we don't have the same problems, and at the same time turn a blind eye to other countries who may be our allies, who frankly have an appalling record when it comes to religious freedom.
Well, let me ask David Quinn. I'll come back to you, but I just want to get a word from David Quinn on this, because some will say, and people are probably tweeting this already, when we're talking about the persecution of Christians, it's different. There's less media coverage and there's less governmental focus.
You see, I think, and I mean, there's been quite a number of books out, for example, by John Allen, who's one of America's most respected correspondents in this area, trying to work out why it is that groups, like Christians of Northern Nigeria or Iraq or Syria or whatever, simply don't get the coverage that they deserve, and they think it's because of an imaginative failure to conceive as Christians in those countries as a minority, because Christianity in the West was dominant for so long, and because of the kind of culture wars, if I can put it that way, going on in the West. And so it becomes extremely difficult to conceive, as I say, of the Christians of places like Iraq as being the extremely oppressed an endangered minority that they are. So we've got to make that imaginative leap. We've got to get over kind of our local parochialism and our local rivalries about issues like, I don't know, abortion or gay marriage or whatever it may happen to be, church-state separation, all these battles.
Keep the big picture. Yeah,
yes,
keep the life and death, the big picture.
Because if we don't see that picture, we're turning a blind eye to one of the most enormous human rights abuses of the present time.
David, thank you very much. And thanks also to the Reverend Nadeem Nassar and Geoffrey Donaldson, MP, for very strong commentary on what we're seeing in the Middle East right now. And as I mentioned in that discussion, I have been speaking this weekend to the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, about what's happening in Iraq. And I asked him if he supported calls for Iraqi Christians to be offered asylum in the United Kingdom.
Yes, the statement I issued yesterday specifically did support the call, which originated from three bishops, particularly with links to that area, who spoke last weekend. And France, as we know, has opened its doors, and I think that is something we could do. We have the resources to do. It won't unleash a flood of immigration. This isn't it's a humanitarian thing to recognize people in the extremes of despair and helplessness and to provide a beacon of hope. We've done that throughout our history. It's a good thing if we go on doing it.
Archbishop, are you in any doubt now that what we are seeing in northern Iraq, the actions of ISIS, the Islamic State so-called, constitute an attempted genocide?
A genocide, it certainly constitutes an attempt to wipe out anyone who does not believe as they do, whether they're other Muslims, whether they're Christians, whether they're Yazidis, whichever group they're from, they are attacked with the utmost savagery. We can't hesitate in saying that. This is a great and terrible humanitarian crime that is going on in front of our eyes. That's why there has to be a very determined response.
And as part of that determined response, and I know this is difficult for a church leader, a follower of the Prince of Peace to say, but as part of that determined response is military action. Now, not only inevitable, but the right thing to do to protect these vulnerable minorities.
I'm simply not qualified to answer that question. I'm not going to do the armchair general bit. If it is clear that military action will stop the attacks, then historical just war theory within Christian one stream of Christian teaching would say that it's justified. If it's not going to make an effective difference, then you're simply increasing the total amount of violence. But as I say, that is something for military experts to decide and to advise politicians on. I think we have to be very careful, particularly from within the church, in advocating a particular approach when we don't have the expertise to know what we're saying.
Finally, Archbishop, do you have any concerns about the possible implications of all of this for relationships between Christians and Muslims around the world?
Yes, I do. I think that is a concern, not because this is a Muslim attack on Christians in simple terms. Muslim leaders throughout the country, throughout the United Kingdom, have been condemning these attacks, and those I know have been condemning them in the most forthright language. But it can set a pattern and a mood that we need to be clear is wrong. This is an incredibly complex conflict, and it is a particular group that is carrying out the attacks that many Muslim leaders deny has any real theological validity. And Christians, too, I mean, the great trial and challenge to Christians is Jesus saying to us, forgive your enemies, love your enemies. And that may not solve problems, but in the end, it changes the world. It may not be a quick fix, but it is the right thing in the end. Now, clearly, ISIS, IS are an enemy. How do we deal with them? It's very, very hard to say. But what we mustn't do is, in blanket terms, condemn all Muslims as though they were all members of this group.